Life is not worth living.
Fiona Shaw was reading the final part of William Boyd's Brazzaville Beach. It was abridged by Yvonne Antrobus and the producer was Pete Atkin. We're next week to the riverbank and the start of an eventful life in the Devon countryside. Nicholas Farrell reads Henry Williamson's story of Tarka the Otter.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Well, there's drama on the way this afternoon with the final part of George Gissing's tale of struggling Victorian writers, New Grub Street, at 3 o'clock. First, from 2009, John Osborne concludes his one-man journey of the airwaves with a look at the future of radio in part 5 of Radiohead. The reader is Lee Ingleby.
We're at the beginning of a journey, Natalie Schwartz explained as her assistant brought in our coffees. We're experimenting with on-demand broadcasting and our listeners are giving really positive feedback.
I had contacted Schwartz because her name appeared in practically every article I'd read about the future of radio. At that time, as well as being director of Channel 4 Radio, Schwartz was also a key figure in the 4 Digital Consortium, a second radio multiplex which had been set up to rival the BBC, in which Channel 4 would play a central role, along with networks such as Sky News Radio and Sunrise UK. Listeners tend to be loyal to their radio station, which puts stations in a very powerful position, she told me, resting her spoon beside her coffee cup. Technology plays to radio's strengths, and we want to use that here at Channel 4 to be a bit bolder. Get the oomph back again. We spent an hour talking enthusiastically about our shared love of radio, specifically Channel 4's online presence, where you could download podcasts relating to Big Brother, Richard and Judy and Hollyoaks, as well as Slash Music with John Peel's son, Tom Ravenscroft, which had become essential listening for me. In the weeks after that meeting, however, it became apparent that outside the offices of Channel 4, the same optimism for the launch was not shared. In October 2008, it was finally confirmed that Channel 4 Radio was to be no more. It was permanently detuned before its first words had been spoken. Its demise was greeted with a sense of inevitability. The key issue cited was money. The costs were great, and the chances of them being recouped had become increasingly unlikely. The money men were fleeing from digital radio. Advertisers weren't interested. Bosses were writing words like revenue and loss on flip charts and scratching their heads. Reading about the demise of Channel 4 Radio made me think of Jane Anderson at the Radio Times and her comments that the joy of listening to Radio 4 was the beauty of not knowing what's coming next, and that kind of radio will always exist. But radio in the 21st century has to be different. It has to go hand in hand with the internet. Perhaps a digital multiplex was the wrong idea for Channel 4. Richard Wheatley, chief executive of the local radio company, which owns and operates 21 local radio stations, described DAB as the Betamax of radio, questioning the logic of buying a piece of equipment that offered services already available online. Everything Natalie Schwartz had told me remained true, but it seemed the format was wrong. If there is anything that can inject radio with a shot of adrenaline, it is the internet. Internet radio really can work. This American Life is a weekly hour-long program on Chicago Public Radio, whose podcasts have 500,000 downloads each week. Each episode focuses on a different subject, stories of real-life America. And it's as entertaining and informative as any radio show I've ever heard. I spend the evening listening to radio online. Anyone with a microphone and a basic grasp of where to plug it in can present their own show and have it available to anyone who is prepared to click on the right page. As well as podcasts, you can listen to radio stations across the world. After a few seconds of buffering, you can hear stations in Helsinki or Brazil, or the Caribbean gospel choirs and steel drums of Barbados Radio. In the same way, even if you are thousands of miles from the UK, you can still tune in to Terry Wogan, Test Match Special and John Gaunt. By the time I get to bed, I have made myself a full schedule to listen to the next day at work, and I look forward to sitting at my desk, type in my customary data while being station controller for the day. On my playlist is a free podcast by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant that was made for NME Radio, followed by a brand new episode of This American Life, Simon Mayo's 5 Live book panel, Radio 4's news quiz, and as the day draws on, I'll be treated to the show I look forward to most of all. Tommy Boyd's latest podcast from Play Radio. Podcasting used to be something that would strike fear into generations who grew up with lino floors and listen with mother. But the terminology is no longer terrifying or geeky. Things have moved on. Anyone can download. The retired are as likely to podcast as students. But the internet has not taken anything away from radio's traditional values. There will always be radios in kitchens beside beds. No matter what happens with the internet, people will continue to wake up with Wogan, tune into the shipping forecast, have a bath while listening to book at bedtime. Most modern Iranian music is substandard, the lady on the radio says. But the next record is some exciting Afro-Persian jazz hip-hop. I am listening to Resonance FM, an arts-based London community station, and the programme is Six Pillars to Persia. It is 1:30 in the afternoon. I am eating sandwiches at my desk and looking forward to the rest of the day, supplementing my data entry with something much more arty. From rebel artists and exile writers to social entrepreneurs, host Farry Bradley continues, we preview a picture of the hotchpotch that is the Iranian diaspora in the arts now. She plays London-based Black Blooms, and then the latest song by Pouya Mahmoudi, the Iranian guitarist. I was in the pub talking about radio. The subject turned to other stations I should try out, and a few people around the table turned out to be unified in their love of Resonance FM. No one was able to describe Resonance to me. They just shook their heads, smiled, told me to give it a listen, promised it would be worthwhile. The station's transmitter is at London Bridge, but only has a range of around 3 miles, so its online presence is vital to those further afield. I go to the office kitchen to get myself a drink, but as soon as I walk through the doorway, I stop and instinctively think about turning round, vaulting back to my seat. Poppy has stood with her back to the wall, her arms folded, her eyes pink and blotchy. Are you okay? I ask, rising to the challenge. She nods, dabbing her eyes with a corner of a threadbare tissue. I don't know why she's been crying. Maybe she's had bad news. Maybe she's having relationship troubles. Maybe she just trapped a little finger in the cutlery drawer. I decide not to ask. It's not really any of my business. Instead, I pull down on the roll of kitchen towel, tear off a piece like I've beheaded a dragon, and hand it to her. I look at the kettle in the corner, click to on, but the plug out of its socket. She smiles as I correct her mistake. Do you want tea? I ask, reaching down 2 mugs. Yes, please. I know how she takes her tea, milk, 1 sugar. This is information I shouldn't know. Do you want milk and sugar? Yes, please. Milk, 1 sugar. I fill the 2 mugs with hot water, spoon the tea bags into the pedal bin, and go back to my desk. She smiles at me as she walks past back to her seat. At 4 o'clock, the show on air is called Radia. The sound of someone doing the washing up is accompanied by battle cries, horses' hooves, cheers. I start to daydream, stare at my computer screen like it's a vortex, and get swept into the world of Resonance FM. When something is so far from normality, it can be best to cast aside cynicism. Leave the world you are familiar with behind you and immerse yourself in this other universe being offered to you. Otherwise, you may as well not bother listening at all. The battle cries continue, as do the sounds of running water, pots and pans being scraped and rinsed. Then the battle stops. Sounds become more mundane. A bumblebee, a piano playing, the sound of chopping vegetables. The archers without dialogue. It is 5:30. I say goodbye to Alan Medlicott and Craig. unplug my headphones from the computer, turn everything off, and look forward to getting home to carry on listening to Resonance FM. I haven't looked at today's schedule. I don't want to know what will happen next. On its website, the station describes itself as a box of curiosities, and it is this that makes it unlike any radio I've ever heard. It has the beauty of an overheard conversation.
So, Monday morning, deadly crowd, scrubbed and trapped in tight held boots, talks about Friday nights, sweet aunt looks, as they go to drive them flats, they mind the gap.
Listening to Resonance is like talking to strangers on a train. A conversation begins, you get a brief snapshot of somebody's life before they get off at the next station, their seat taken by someone else with a story to tell. "Hello. I'm your floor," says a voice at 6:30. "This is a weekly show, recorded from the perspective of the floor," continues the voice, which I imagine belongs to a teenager who wears Doctor Who pyjamas and is allergic to soya. "I am currently lying down. My head is about 7 inches from the ground. It's a wooden floor, laminated. I am wearing shoes and corduroy trousers that make a swish sound. I might half watch a film later. I'm going to say goodbye now and leave you to your floor." Which is exactly what he does. We hear footsteps, the faint blare of a TV, murmurs of voices in another room, the words inaudible. This goes on for half an hour. I can't work out whether it's the weirdest show I've ever heard, or the work of genius. "It's probably polite to fade out now so there can be a jingle or something, and another programme can start. Today's floor has been my living room. Goodbye from me, and goodbye from my floor. Or by now, your floor." These people at Resonance love radio. They know how exciting it can be. I decide cooking is out of the question. On my kitchen notice board, takeaway menus are displayed like treasured family photographs. I take one down for a local Indian. I want to order the meal deal of chicken jalfrezi, pilau rice, plain naan, onion bhaji. It sounds too lonely to ask for a meal for one, so I'll get a vindaloo. At 11 p.m. is the glass shrimp, which plays obscure music. A lot of it from Finland, Iceland, Germany. I don't know how many listeners Resonance has at this time of night, but even if the only person who has tuned in is me, then the time the two presenters have put into choosing which songs to play, putting the show together, leaving their house, getting on the tube, bleeping their Oyster cards, it's all worthwhile. They are doing exactly what I want to do. I decide to look on the internet for how to apply to volunteer at Resonance FM. But then I have a better idea. Think more locally and see if there are any community stations in Norwich. I find Future Radio, a station that began broadcasting last year and is within walking distance from my house. I email them, tell them I am a big fan of radio and would love to get involved. The thought of being involved with Future Radio excites me, and I look forward to opening up my emails tomorrow, staring at my inbox, clicking on refresh, waiting to hear from them. I go to bed during Max Tundra's show, who plays the Butthole Surfers and John Cooper Clark. "I'd like to dedicate this show to a woman I saw crying on the tube today," he says. "I hope she's all right."
Radiohead by John Osborne was read by Lee Ingleby, and the producer was Jill Waters. Now, there's nothing nicer than a trip to a beautiful garden in the summertime. So next week, how about you join us at Sissinghurst, once home to Vita Sackville-West and Harold Nicholson. Adam Nicholson reads his account of growing up there and his vision of how to manage its future. All next week here on 4 Extra at 2:45 in Sissinghurst, an unfinished history.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I was frightened. I wouldn't let myself think it.
Disturbing dreams of possible futures. will be asked to give up their lives to bear children who aren't even their own.
Enough is enough! I want to speak to someone in authority!
Dangerous visions.
She told him not to feed it, not to go there.
Including new dramatizations of J.G. Ballard's Concrete Island and The Drowned World.
Do you know the name of this city, Robert?
This was London.
Across BBC Radio 4 and Radio 4 Extra.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
3 o'clock, time for drama here on 4 Extra. It's Joanna Pinnock with you for Friday afternoon. And in a moment, we've got the final part of George Gissing's novel set in London's literary and journalistic circles in the 1880s and featuring one Edwin Reardon. And Mel's celebrating the summer solstice in an hour by playing the ukulele and doing a hula dance in a virtual raffia skirt in a very summery 4 o'clock show. So now, Harold Pinter once again narrates our story of a group of struggling writers whose battles between artistic integrity and the dictates of the marketplace are fought out in pokey garrets during the 1880s. And in the final part of New Grub Street, the legacy of John Yule is about to transform the lives of Marion and Amy, but not quite in the way they imagined.
New Grub Street by George Gissing. Dramatised by Tony Ramsey, with Harold Pinter as the narrator. Episode 3.
The will of the late Mr. John Yule sent shockwaves through the Valley of the Shadow of Books. As yet, Edwin Reardon was ignorant of the change that had overtaken his wife Amy's fortunes. His life in Islington went on much as it had done before. He spent his days as a clerk, and in the evenings passed long hours walking with his friend Biffin. He wrote hardly at all. But for Alfred Yule, the familiar landscape had changed utterly. With the death of his own hopes, he found himself obliged to adapt to a new world, a world which now entertained the prospect of his daughter Marion's inheritance.
Ah, this is really a very good article, Marion.
Thank you, Father.
Perhaps you might say a little more about the historical aspects. One mustn't be too elusive with general readers. Their ignorance is incredible.
Very well.
But really, there is so little to alter. I wouldn't feel justified in sending it in as my own work. You must sign it, Marion, and have the credit.
Do you think that would be wise?
Why not? I think we may fairly say your apprenticeship is at an end. No other girl of your age could have written it. Who knows? I may be counting on you as a valued contributor before long. And that reminds me, I'm calling in on Jedwood next Sunday. Why don't you join us?
I will go if you wish, Father, but I'd rather not.
Oh, come, come. Surely I have a claim on your companionship now and then. We might discuss the review a little. By the by, what do you think of letters for the title? It hasn't been used, so far as I know. In Johnson's day, letters was pretty much the equivalent of culture. A man of letters and so forth. I think letters might do very well.
You talk of the review as if it was a reality.
With someone like Jedwood behind it, it might very soon become one. Seen purely as an investment, a new magazine with myself as editor...
Father, I have not agreed to this.
I know, baby. But that need not prevent us from exploring the possibilities.
It would be unfair of me to raise your hopes.
Oh, yes, of course we are. We are talking hypothetically. I merely point out that letters would be an admirable title if we were to go ahead, that's all.
Edwin Reardon, I believe I'm expecting
you. You were to go into Mr. Carter's office, sir, this way.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I was looking for Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter is not here, nor will he be joining us. Please, forgive me this little bit of scheming. Edwin, I have something very important to speak to you about.
If Amy has sent you to...
She has not. I take it you have not heard from my daughter?
Not for some time, as I believe you are well aware.
Then you don't know what has come to pass?
I have heard of nothing.
I took Mr. Carter into my confidence. He was good enough to suggest our meeting here, as it were, on neutral ground. It seems to me I must do everything I can in these sad circumstances.
No, I am sorry, but I do not understand
Amy's uncle, John Yule, is dead.